And now allow me to introduce our first speaker. Imam Muhammad Al-Asi was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan in 1951. At the age of 11, he moved to Lebanon. There, he completed high school and attended the Arab University of Beirut, where he intensively studied the Arabic language. In 1973, the Imam returned to the U.S. and attended the University of Maryland, graduating with a degree in government and politics in 1979. The Imam is active in the global Islamic movement, most notably through his involvement with the Crescent International News magazine. Imam Asi is the Imam who formerly led the prayer at the Islamic Center of Washington. He was elected as the Imam of the Islamic Center in 1981. In March of 1983, Imam Asi was expelled from the center for preaching truthful views on particular subjects regarding U.S. policy. Although he still identifies himself as the Imam of the Islamic Center, the center has stated that it has no affiliation with him. He still holds Jum'ah khutbahs every Friday on the sidewalk in front of the Islamic Center in protest of his undemocratic expulsion. He currently spends most of his time working on ideological elucidation of Islamic principles, particularly the first English exegesis, which is tafsir, of the Holy Quran. 17 volumes have been completed, out of which 6 volumes have been published. It is titled The Ascendant Quran. Now, with a loud salawat, please welcome Imam Asi to the podium with his topic, The Political Aspect of an Islamic Identity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله على آله وصحبه ومن اهتدى بهدى. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. I'd like to begin by just making a couple of adjustments to the introduction concerning your humble speaker here. There's been about almost 20 volumes of the tafsir that I'm working on that have been completed as far as writing it is concerned, instead of the 17 that were mentioned. 6 of them should be available if anyone wants them. The 7th and 8th volumes are in customs in New York. Usually sometimes you get a hard time getting those in. Hopefully this time it's not going to be that difficult. So the 7th and 8th volumes are out. The second thing I'd like to say is that the Jumu'ah prayers in Washington, D.C., and that effort, and I think this will lead me into the presentation. The purpose for yours truly being outside of the Islamic Center for more than 31 years now, and prohibited from entering the center, and beyond that, prohibited from going to the Hajj or Umrah, or for any other reason, going to the Arabian Peninsula, is precisely the topic of that you have for me to speak to you about this afternoon. And that is the political character or the political identity of committed Muslims. This is a dear subject to me, but before I begin to expand a few ideas on it, I would like to pay tribute to blessed soul of our late Al-Imam Al-Khumayni, may Allah rest him in eternal peace. He is, by any objective comment, he is the forerunner and the pace setter in our generation and time of what is referred to in the mainstream media as political Islam. The Muslims have been living for many, and when I say Muslims, I mean all Muslims. They've been living for many centuries in an absence of their political responsibilities. Muslims haven't developed in the past hundreds of years any discourse as far as Islamic ideology is concerned. Our library is anemic when it comes to books on Islamic political, ideological, administrative, strategic responsibilities. We simply don't have those types of books, and if we do have them, they are scarce. There's not many of them. Imam al-Khomeini came and he set into motion a course that has caused some Muslims to begin to contribute to this lost dimension in our presence in this world. And may Allah shower him with the choicest of his mercies in the abode of eternal peace. Now, to speak about when you say political, sometimes politics and political, people understand it as a dirty word. And in and of itself, there's nothing dirty or negative about the administration of the public affairs of Muslims or of any other people. There's nothing dirty about it. You're in the vocabulary of today's world, you're a public servant. There's nothing wrong, there's nothing that tarnishes you for being a public servant. The fact of the matter is that we have a political world, the world around us. When you enter, you speak about politics, you speak about partisan politics, and you speak about politicians, and you speak about policies, and then you begin to enter into a realm in which there's bribery, and there's connections, and there is lobby, there are lobbies, and interests, personal interests, group interests, national interests. And you get to this murky area in which, you know, the word becomes defiled. The word becomes polluted. But it's not that way in its original sense. So when we use the word political Islam or Islamic politics or these types of things, there's nothing, one word doesn't contaminate the other. Politics doesn't contaminate Islam. It's the moral character that the Muslim has that gives politics its positive connotation. Because we are moral. Muslims, in the grain of them, are moral. So if we are moral and we come to an economic issue, or we come to an educational issue, or we come to an administrative issue, or we come to a political issue, we come to it with our moral selves, with our moral motivation, with our moral input, and with our moral objectives. So politics in this respect will gain a positive and a noteworthy description and definition. But the problem has been with we the Muslims, the problem has been that when we go back to our sources, the words of Allah, the teachings of His Prophet, and the instructions of the Imams, and those who are considered in the realm of Allah's awliya, when we go into this area, we find that the legacy, these references and this reference material, we haven't worked our political minds to give these ayat and these hadiths, to give them their pertinent and their practical political meanings. That's the problem there. To take just an example, the recitation you just listened to, the wonderful voice that rendered the ayat of these Quran. It began by saying, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ لِمَنْ كَانَ يَرْجُو اللَّهَ وَالْيَوْمَ الْآخِرِ وَذَكَرَ اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا. You know, this ayah many of you have heard, I'm sure, if not scores of times, if not hundreds of times, scores of times. لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ. You have in the Apostle of Allah an exemplar of perfection. Uswatun hasana. You've heard that many times. You've had it translated in your own languages besides the English language and all this. But what happens in this particular incident, and I'm using this as an example to drive home the point, is that you don't think about this in a political, much less in a military context. Everyone quotes this ayah, or mostly everyone quotes this ayah, and they say that, oh, the Prophet of Allah, he is our prototype in whichever direction we are going in life, which is generally true. That is one of the general meanings of the ayah. But to be more specific, this ayah is coached in a context of ayah. لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَأَيْهِ. You just listen to this. But what I'm trying to say to you is you listen to it in the absence of a working or an active political mind. لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ لِمَنْ كَانَ يَرْجُو اللَّهَ وَالْيَوْمَ الْآخِرِ وَذَكَرَ اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا. Then it says, وَلَمَّا رَأَى الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الْأَحْزَابَ قَالُوا هَذَا مَا وَعَدَنَا اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَصَدَقَ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَمَا زَادَهُمْ إِلَّا إِيمَانًا وَتَسْلِيمًا. See, this ayah came just before a military affair. It is an introduction to what Allah and His Prophet are saying to the committed Muslims when they are in an existential battle with the Confederates that came to undo Islamic political self-determination in Al-Madina. When they were besieged, there are two incidents that are related to us in the lifetime of our beloved Prophet. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his. There were the two most difficult times in his struggle. The Battle of Uhud, when he was injured and he was blood was running down his face and he was cut and he was harmed and he was in pain. That was one. And the other one was the siege, the military siege of Al-Medina, when all of the forces of the Arabian Peninsula that were adverse and hostile to Islamic self-determination in Al-Medina, in addition to the Yahudi combination with these forces, when they came to finish off Islamic self-determination in Al-Medina. And Islamic self-determination has nothing to do per se with rituals. No one is speaking about rituals. The war against Muslim governance in Al-Medina was not because Muslims were praying and fasting and doing the rituals. It was because Muslims had a social and a political character. Something that Imam al-Khumayni, may Allah's blessings be upon him, something that he came and he brought into public discourse. And so, if we care to live up to our responsibilities, our future outlook should be that this wasn't a freak event. Because now you listen to some Muslims when they whisper in their in the privacy of their personal discussions. Now, some of them will tell you that, you know, they speak about Islamic, and not many people say this. When was the last time you heard a speaker speak to you about Islamic self-determination? Or Islamic liberation, or the meaning of freedom in Islam? When was the last time you heard these types of presentations or lectures or sermons or khutbas or whatever. When was the last time you heard it? If it was some months ago or some years ago, that means that there is a type of internal drift away from this momentous effort that was set into motion by the beloved Imam Rahmatullahi Alayhi. So these people, in the privacy of their own personal discussions, will tell, you know, this Islamic revolution and this thing, this is it's something that happened, it's like a miracle, and now we have to settle back. What do you mean settle back? If you want to go back and settle back, the only back that I know was the Shah and imperialism and you not being in control of your own affairs, and Islam being a ritualistic Islam that is incarcerated in the masjid or in the hauza, and an Islam that doesn't have a social and a collective character. You want to go back to that? So there is a type of backpedaling that is taking place. In some areas, it is very subtle. In some areas, these types of individuals try to be shrewd. And they will accompany you. Now, here I am in front of you. I'm just an individual, just like each and every one of you. But they know who I am. And I say this with meekness, minus the ego in all of this. So they'll walk with me as far as I can go, and then they will try to throw in a curveball at the end, and say that this Islamic effort has run its course, and now we have to look at ourselves as Shia'i first, or Iranian first, or whatever other description that they may have. And this whole talk about liberation, about Islam, about an Islamic future, about the oppressed, al-mustadafin, the oppressors, al-mustakbirin. These words, just like I said at the beginning, I mentioned to you some things that you may not be hearing frequently anymore. But these are another, just two words. When was the last time you heard al-mustadafin? When was the last time you heard al-mustakbirin? This is a good way to judge those speakers who come to speak to you. Do they use these words? And if they don't, what's wrong? These are not words that were made up by an Imam al-Khumayni. May Allah rest his soul in peace. No, these are Quranic words. You'll find the word al-mustadafin, al-ladhina stud'ifu, al-mustakbirin, al-ladhina stakbaru. You'll find these in the Quran. So if these are Quranic words, why are certain speakers, those who travel to speak, they go a great distance, and then they want to dodge and avoid and skip using these words? What's wrong? Something's wrong? What is wrong is, I come back to the initial point. What is wrong is, they refuse to use, to stimulate, to activate a political thinking mind. That's what it is. That is the core of the issue. They don't want a political thinking mind when there are ample ayat in the Quran that activate the political part of our mind. Many of them. Inna Fir'auna ala fil ardi wa ja'ala ahlaha shi'a. That's an ayah that begs our political thinking. إِنَّ الظَّالِمِينَ بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ بَعْضٍ. Oppressors are natural allies of each other. Indeed, inna. That's a political statement. Are we going to have political minds coming forth? I'm going to pick this meaning. I'm going to take this meaning from the Quran and I'm going to place it in the real world today. I'm going to define who these oppressors are. Do we have that element? Do we have that moral and that intellectual courage to come out and say, yes, I understand what Allah Jalla wa Ala is saying to me, and Allah has endowed me with the capacity to think, so I am going to define who meets this meaning in real life, out there, in tangible terms. Who's going to do that? And I invite your memory, I stimulate your memory to think about the speakers who come to you, and I don't withhold any words. I think throughout all of these years, many of you know, I'm not hiding things. We have a trend now in which speakers who exactly fit that description, they want to avoid the political mind. They say, I'm not going to mention any names, but I've heard it. Some of them were as frank as to express themselves and say, what was all of this revolution about? The revolution of Imam al-Khomeini and the followers of Imam al-Khomeini. Khat al-Imam. You know, remember that word? It went down the memory hole. Khat al-Imam is a word that went down the memory hole of many people. So they come and say, said one of these characters says to me, what was this revolution all about? I think it was, you know, it wasn't worth the effort and the time and the struggle and the blood and the treasury and everything that went into it. It wasn't worth it. Wouldn't we have been better off just continuing with maybe a change of the regime of the Shah? And then have some type of administration and some type of government. And remember, this word is not coming from an average individual. This word is coming from a person who fought at the war fronts, who studied in Qom, was an official in one of the houses. So it's not coming from, you know, some Joe Blow. It's coming from someone who has some weight, at least in his own circles. And I thank him for his candidness. So he comes and he says, what's all this about? We could have just done away with the old regime and established some type of administration that gives and takes in a diplomatic way, and we have prosperity in our country, and we come up to par. Look at what's happening in the Persian Gulf. It takes a look at Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Doha and these places. Look at these skyscrapers. Look at the abundance and wealth. Look at this. These people in the Gulf, they can't manufacture a needle. You who are in the spirit of an imam, you are right now in the process of manufacturing continental missiles. So I orient myself to this type of character, and he has his multiplicities all around. He's cloned. There are many people like him. I tell you, they don't say that. They dare not ascend a podium like this and express what's deep down inside of them. They won't do it like that. They'll take you to the side, where they'll take a couple of you, and then they'll try to begin a give and take so that they think right now the world is going their way. and this is a lost cause. It's not a lost cause. The superpowers of the world are beginning to crumble. You can see it here. We live in a society, in a government that's supposed to be a superpower government, right? People right now are breaking records. In this society, they're breaking records in as far as obtaining food stamps, in as far as not having health insurance, in as far as not being employed, in as far as the addiction problems that are prevalent, the medical issues, the wars that they have entangled themselves in. 130 countries around the world that has between 800 and 1,000 American military bases and installations in it. The breaking another record in as far as setting a new ceiling for the debt, approaching $17.5 trillion officially off the records. It's somewhere around $60 trillion. I don't know how these people think. They are imprisoned in their immediate self. They want to become, I don't know. I honestly, maybe Allah, you know, sometimes they say ignorance is bliss. Maybe, you know, some of my ignorance of the type of characters, psychology, culture, background that these individuals come from is a bliss. It's a blessing. That I don't know how they form. I mean, going through all of that, being a potential shaheed, and then winding up mired in some type of diplomacy, or even working on the other side of the issue. I don't know how this happens, but it's happened. It's a fact of life, and we have to face it. And equipped with the information that comes to us from Allah and His Prophet and the Imams, anyone can face this type of trivia that we have personified in characters like that. You want to turn from relying on the Islamic revolution that brought about the Islamic Republic, that has given us the only Muslims in the world that have true independence are the ones who are celebrating or commemorating this occasion and similar occasions. You're the only Muslims in the world who have true independence. And it didn't come free. It didn't come cheap. There were shuhada, there were martyrs, there was blood, with sweat, and there were tears involved in your independence. Remember at the beginning, I'm sure some of you who are my age still remember those words at the beginning of this monumental change that took place with the leadership of the Imam. The Imam, some people don't, what's that word? I saw on television just the other day, I was watching Press TV. And they made reference, this was in English, of course, they made reference, I can't remember the program, but it was on in this past week. English, it says, I think there was some visitation by officials from the Islamic government to the marqad of the Imam, the mausoleum of the Imam. And in English it said something like the late Ayatullah Ruhullah al-Musawi al-Khumayni. And then it said, also known as al-Imam al-Khumayni. This is at a high level. We're not speaking about, you know, low level. Sometimes you forgive people who are ignorant. Some people are ignorant. And they say these things out of ignorance. They don't know better. But when this begins to appear on this level, you know, as if to say the correct reference to this personality is Ayatullah, Ruhullah, and Musa al-Khumayni, and then there are some people who call him an Imam Khumayni. That's, when I was reading that, that's what it said to me. What's wrong? What happened? You couldn't say this type of thing during his lifetime. You couldn't say it in the first few years after his life. This creeping in effect began to take effect. And then we have it. Here it is. You see it on this level. Someone should have yanked the person who was responsible for this wording and said, do you really mean this? Do they have people who are responsible who can, you know, take them to task for something like that? But this is how it goes. This one say, I don't know. I don't know who's responsible for the wording, the editors who are there, and all of this. But I know that there is this gradual erosion that is taking place in the psychology of many people. And the reason why this descending psychology is in effect is because, once again, I refer to the absence of a political thinking Muslim mind. That's what's needed. And I'm not trying to here, you know, present you with a sales pitch. Far from it. And I'm not here trying to promote anything. But I've been spending the last 15 years, at least, on trying to stimulate this thinking Islamic political mind in the public, without getting on anyone's nerves, and without touching on anyone's cultural or background sensitivities. I'm to deliver a message. This message is in the spirit and is in the core of what Al-Imam Al-Khumayni stood for. قَدَّسَ اللَّهُ سِرَّهُ الشَّرِيفِ. And I hope that in due time, we will see the eventual victory of the powerless and the oppressed and the excluded, men, women, and children of this world will overcome the barrier of injustice, and we will recapture the essence of our responsibilities, that is to do justice on earth. See, I'll end with bringing to your attention the difference. You know, we use two words, al-adl and al-qist. These are Quranic words, and I'm sure you are familiar with them. But what you may not be familiar with is the subtle, it's not subtle, but the difference that exists between al-qist and al-adl. You can't use them interchangeably, because these are two different words. They have in a sense, they have a general meaning that is similar, but they have a peculiar meaning that is different. Al-adl, well, there are many ayat in the Quran that mention al-adl in it. Now is no time, I'm running out of time here, I was just alerted back there. Al-adl simply means justice, organic justice, personal justice. That's what al-adl means. You can do adil, I can do adil, anyone can do adil. Inna Allaha ya'muru bil adil. Because each one of us is capable of that. But al-qist is social justice. It's organized justice. It is collective justice. It is governmental justice. That's what al-qist is. قُلْ أَمَرَ رَبِّي بِالْقِسْطِ. So there's a difference here between these meanings. Why is it that in all of these years, in all of these encounters, and listening to these words, it hasn't been clear in our minds that al-qist is the responsibility of al-jama'ah, and al-adl is primarily the responsibility of al-fard. Why? Because, like I said, and I continue to say, we don't have a politically thinking, collective, Muslim, public mind. And I hope with those words, I don't encroach on the presentation of the following speaker. If I've taken a minute or two, I beg your pardon and your patience. And may Allah rest the soul of Imam al-Khumayn in heavenly abode, and may his message radiate with our efforts at whichever level these efforts are required. وَاللَّهُ يَقُولُ الْحَقِّ وَهُوَ يَهْدِي السَّبِيلِ وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ. Thank you very much, brothers and sisters.